So the bill of material shows all the parts which are required to make one of the item. Each part or item has only one part number. So this has to be unique. And even before the ERP systems came in, we all know that computers don't understand descriptions. They only understand codes. So in computerized systems, you have the product codes, etc. But even before that, you had the part numbers given for every component, because let us say that you delivered a product and there is a breakdown of the product, and if that part had to be ordered, you had to exactly know the part number, which would depend upon the model, etc., so that you are supplying the exact component which is required for that particular product. A specific number is unique to one part and is not assigned to any other part. So this is very clear. Every part number will be unique. So let us say that you're making three types of tables, and the hardware kit which goes into all these is the same. That means, the nut bolts or the screw or whatever goes into this kit in all those cases is the same. Then in that case, you will maintain the same part number in all those three BOMs. But if there is any difference in the specifications, in the length, in the dimensions, in the characteristics, then you will have a unique specific number given to that component or that sub-assembly. So a part is defined by its form, fit or function. If any of this changes, then it is not the same part and it must have a different part number. So the example I gave, you may have a bolt, and the bolt is the length of the bolt is 30 millimeter. Now you are using similar kind of a bolt, but of 40 millimeter length in some other assembly. The part number of both these will be different because the length is different. Although the diameter of the bolt may be the same, other dimensions may be the same, but since the length is different, they become two different parts. So for example, a part when painted becomes a different part and must have a different number. So if the part could be painted in three different colors, then each must be identified with its unique number. Take the example of the car seats. So you have a beige color seat or a black color seat, right? They will be two different parts. Or take an automobile, the dashboard and the insides, they are also coming in, a black color or a beige color or two tones. Many a times nowadays in the premium model, you have dual tone. So each of these will have a different part number. Although in all other manner, they may be exactly identical. So what is the use of bill of material? The bill of material is one of the most widely used document in a manufacturing company. Why? It contains the product definition, the engineering change control, the service parts, planning, order entry. Now, product definition means the entire specification. So even if it's a simple bolt, whether it's going to be a simple carbon steel or whether it is stainless steel or whether it is made of any specific kind of a material, engineering change control. So it could be that due to failures, etc., the engineering department has found that the material of the bolt was not okay, and they need to upgrade the material of the component or the bolt in our case. So they will make a change. So this also will be captured. So it will clearly say that the component which is required should not be of a carbon steel, but it should be of a particular grade of steel. Service parts, so this could be just a service part number which is given by the company, which is for after sales service or for ordering purpose. Planning, which means what if you have to order this part, what is the minimum quantity that you need to order? For example, if you are ordering bolts, you cannot order 5 bolts or 10 bolts. There will be a certain minimum quantity. Let's say the quantity will be 200 bolts, or it could be even more than that, because it may come in a bulk packing, like in a carton or a box or so. So also, what is the lead time how many days in advance you need to order this material, what is the maximum material you can order at a time. So for example, in chemical industry, if you're bringing the material in liquid form by a tanker, then the maximum material you can order at any given point of time will depend upon what is the maximum size of a tanker which is available. So if you have to order the material, it has to be ordered in multiple of tanker loads or in multiple of truck loads in case of other kind of material. Order entry, when a product has a very large number of options. Manufacturing, the bill provides a list of the parts needed to make the assemble, make or assemble. So this will also be, you know, for the sub assemblies, etc., where you will require a number of components together for the assembly purpose. And of course, the costing. So normally it will tell you what is the current running cost of this item. Current running cost and also the standard cost. Many companies, they follow the standard cost procedure. So there you can see what is the standard cost of this material and also what is the moving average cost of this material based on, because it could happen that you are bringing the material from two or three sources and the weighted average of this could be slightly different from the standard cost which is maintained in the system. So parameters required to be mapped in the MRP system. The planning time fence specifies a period within which no automatic changes are to be made to the plan. So generally we also call it the time fence or the frozen zone. So when you are making a plan, you are freezing a certain period. That means you cannot make a change, let's say, for the plan of the current week. So let's say we are on a Monday. So the current week plan, which starts from Monday up to Sunday, let's assume that we are a 24/7 company. So then you cannot make a change to this plan. Now, in more flexible manufacturing units, this plan can be shorter. It can be 1 day or 2 days. So if you already have a planning time fence of let's say 2 days, then your plan for 2 days is frozen. So what come May, you will not change this planning for this period. Plan delivery time in days or lead time. So number of calendar days needed to obtain the material or service. We already talked about this. So the total lead time. And mind you, how the total lead time is calculated or the delivery time. So let us say the item is a custom made item and the vendor needs to make the item once he receives the order. So he requires 10 days to do this. And from the day he gets a purchase order, on the 10th day he can deliver it. But your own purchase department is going to take 2 days to release the order. So by the time they receive the purchase requisition and the time they release a purchase order, they require 2 days. And assume that it's a very critical material which needs to be inspected on receipt, and your quality assurance say that we require 1 day to test the material. So what we have here is about 13 days. So 10 days for the supplier, 2 days for your purchase department or the procurement, and 1 day for the quality assurance. And there could be a weekend in between. So like assume that you gave a purchase requisition on a Friday. So then they will only act on it on Monday or so. So what you do is, in such a case, you take the lead time, delivery time as 15 days. So this is how you are defining the delivery time in the system to make sure that the delivery time is realistic and it can be adhered to. And generally, these are the service levels. So procurement also gives us, they have a service level where they will say, look, if we get a purchase requisition within 48 working hours, we will release the purchase order. Likewise, there is a service level agreement with even the suppliers who say that within 10 days, we will deliver the material. Safety stock. So we talked about, you always need to maintain certain safety stock, which will depend upon what is your lead time. So suddenly if there is a surge in demand, It's not that you just call for the material and the material will be there. So if 1 week or 15 days, the example that we took just now, you will have to look at what is the kind of a variation you have experienced in the past, and that variation you will have to factor it to actually arrive at the safety stock. So let's say in a month I can have a variation of we are talking of the table here, on 500 numbers I have a variation of 100 numbers. That means I suddenly have a surge of 100 tables. Now 15 days is my replenishment time, right? My delivery time. So I can keep say about 50 tables, you know, the material for 50 tables as my safety stock. Minimum lot size. So we talked about the bolts, you know, that you cannot order 5 bolts or 10 bolts. So there is a minimum lot size in which you have to you know, order the material. We also talked about the maximum lot size. So we said that if you have to bring a material in tanker, then, or sometimes even you're importing the material, so it has to come in a full container load. Now a full container load can only take a load of, let's say, for example, for this particular material, 12 tons, then that will be your maximum lot size. Likewise, there could be, you know, even in case of bolts, etc., let us say that the maximum you can order at any given point of time, maybe like take it as, let's say, 2000 pieces. Because the vendor has a limitation, I mean, he cannot supply more than a certain quantity, you know, within the stipulated time. So then that becomes your maximum lot size. The rounding value for purchase order quantity. So many a times your bill of material will throw up a requirement. Let's say we are talking of bolts, and it will say 526 bolts. Now, you normally do not want to order in this kind of odd numbers, because accounting and everything becomes difficult. In industry, we also have, you know, when we are importing the material, the pack size of particular material may be, let's say, 200 kg. So it's available in a 200 kg drum. But there is a condition that whenever you buy this material, you have to buy the material in a pallet load. Now, one pallet load means 4 drums. So in that case, you will have to round your requirement. So although my requirement is 3 drums, which is 600 kg, I will have to round it off to 800 kg. So my requirement has to be in multiples of 800 kg. So that is the rounding value for purchase order quantity. Quota arrangements. So it determines the share of business of various sources of supply. That is different suppliers. In one of the previous chapters, we have seen that you may have L1, L2, L3 supplier, and you are actually splitting the business. So maybe the I put it a little wrongly. Instead of calling L1, L2, you say preference 1, preference 2, preference 3. So you have a vendor assessment system, and you find that your vendor number 1 is giving you the product at the most cost effective rate. His deliveries are always on time. So his assessment or his vendor rating is, let's say, 95%. There is another vendor who has got a vendor rating score of 80%. And there is another vendor who has got a score of 78 or something. So I may actually say that for my requirement, 80% requirement will go to my preferred vendor, which is the vendor number 1, who's got a rating of 95. So this quota arrangement is also you distribute the business between 2 or 3 vendors. One of the reason you do this is that in case any of the vendor is unable to supply because of natural calamity or because of any political unrest or some mishap, even at the vendor premises, you are not stuck. You have alternate sources. So you can always source the material from your vendor number 2 and 3. In short, the material requirement planning process is like this. So you have the master production schedule, and you have the orders on hand and the forecast, which is actually driving the master production schedule. And then you are looking at the bill of material, which tells you that based on the master production schedule, what are the total number of components which are required. Here you have the inventory, which tells you what you already have, which you need not order. So the balance is what you're going to order. So the material requirement planning will then throw up the items for which purchase orders need to be released. You have the material plan, which is given out. So the products which are on hand and the products which are going to come, including, you know, in a scheduled manner. So this plan is available to manufacturing. These are the work orders. So, you know, the manufacturing can actually start manufacturing activity based on the works order, and then you have the reports. So you have the MRP reports, you know, which are required for the management purpose and also for the management decisions actually. So the MRP process follows the following techniques, or the following steps. Exploding the requirement. So it takes the BOM and the master production schedule, and it actually looks at what is the total requirement. The lead time offsetting is you are basically looking at the lead time of all the material, and you are looking at whether you can get the material within the stipulated time or not, or you have to reschedule based on the earliest time when you can bring the material in. Planned orders are, you are planning the production orders, so you are releasing the orders. Basically, you are fixing a time schedule, which is also part of the master production schedule. Based on this, you will first calculate what is the gross requirement of the materials, and then you will come down to the net requirement after looking at your inventory of the raw material or the components, and you will net off what is already available or what is in the pipeline. And once the net requirement has been arrived along with the time schedule, then you release the orders. So releasing orders concludes the process run. See, the order release to production, purchasing and various other department concludes the planning process. But please understand, there is nothing like a conclusion, because we saw that MRP is an ongoing process. So there is no start, there is no end. It's only you're constantly reviewing the process. So in many cases, requirement changes daily. As I said, in my case, that in our company, we are actually running the MRP every day. So if the scenario has changed, then there is a daily review of the MRP. A computer-based material requirement planning system automatically recalculates the requirement for sub-assemblies and components, and recreates planned orders released to meet the shift in the demand. So as we said, shift in demand could be positive, could be negative. If you are selling more than what you have forecasted, then it will tell you that you need to advance your planned orders. You also need to advance your material receipts. Or other way around, if your sales are low, it will ask you to defer your planned orders and also defer your material receipts. Purchase orders, this is the recommended purchasing schedule that includes the order you give to the supplier to send the material. Typically, purchase order is a legal document. It's a document which clearly must specify, because it's like a contract that you have with the vendor. So it clearly has to spell out what is the material, what specifications, what quantity, when it has to be received, what are your terms of payment, what are the tolerances in terms of the delivery that you are willing to accept, etc. All these are contained in the purchase order. The PO includes a schedule with quantities and start and finish dates to meet the MPS. So master production schedule also, you are indicating what is the earliest date you can receive the material and what is the latest date you can receive the material from the vendor. Material plan, this details the raw materials, assembly items and components needs to make the end products with the quantities and the dates. Works order, this details the work that goes into producing the end product, includes which departments are responsible for what part and what materials are necessary and what is the start and end dates. So when you say a planned order, basically it is more about what are the materials, the finished product, which are to be produced in a particular batch or so. A work order is more detailed. It will also tell you what is the routing of the material. So for example, if it has to go through three different operations, then the works order will actually detail all these things. It will tell you that the product has to move through which operations. Finally, the reports. MRP generates primary and secondary reports. The primary reports includes those that deal with production and inventory planning and control. So there is always exception reports, how you have performed, things like, you know, what are the kind of inventories that you're holding, whether you have been meeting the KPIs in terms of what are the allowable inventory level within your organization. There can always be some variation. For example, you already had some stocks on hand, and you know, you did not produce the material, so you are saddled with higher inventories, or materials, you know, which have a very long lead time. You have brought in the material based on the forecast which you had at that point of time 2 months ago, but the sales did not materialize. So there are various reports which the management would require to basically look at how the function is operating. Secondary reports are those that details things such as performance control, exception data, deviations. So this is what we talked about, you know, what are the deviations? Deviations and forecast, deviations and let's say there is a rejection because of which the schedule was upset, or there were stockouts and because of which we could not supply material to the market. So various such exception reports are also generated as part of the MRP system. So finally, we come to the summary. The proper material requirement planning setup helps companies to achieve their main goals. And what are those goals? To ensure that always the products are available as per the master production schedule or as per the demand plan. It helps manufacturing to plan and schedule their production operations in such a way that it will not require any excessive inventory. So you also want to make sure that all the materials are available when the manufacturing has been planned. Main reason is capital preservation and an effective use of working capital. Having less excessive inventory on hand means that the companies do not tie up their valuable cash in inventory. They can remain liquid and use the funds on other needs like expanding operations, investing in new production lines, or organizing additional marketing campaigns. So we talked about inventory is working capital. And not only that, but holding inventory is also costing company money because you need a warehouse, and the more inventory you hold, the bigger warehouse you require. And basically, we also said that holding an inventory doesn't really add value unless it has a strategic purpose. So the lesser the inventory you hold, lower is your cost, lower is the working capital that you're blocking in the process. MRP helps to achieve overall goals of integrated supply chain for an enterprise. Very clear. And I think this is an important thing to understand, that every function, every step in the supply chain is critical. So if one function or one step malfunctions, then the entire system will suffer. So with that, we come to end of this chapter. Thank you.